Raglan Community Radio. All right, and also going to our friends over the Divi on Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato. And I've just been handed a thing here from the Old School Arts Centre, live and local, September, this Friday, Whitamu McCarthy, Brucey Jordan and Takiwa are all playing. Doors open 7 o'clock, Koha entry. And that's Friday, September 17th, 7:30. So there we are. Something else for you to think about for this Friday. But anyways, we are joined in the studio now by our guest for today, Shy.
Hey,
Chris. Kia ora, Shy. How are you going, man?
Yeah, good. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
No worries, mate. And I understand it's your first time on the radio.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it is.
New experience for you?
Yeah. It's really special.
Cool. And I guess firstly, Shy, tell us a little bit about yourself. I've never heard that name before. I met you the other day.
At the workshop,
At the workshop, yeah.
So I'm originally from Israel. I was born in Israel and arrived to New Zealand about 12 years ago. A third of my life I grew up in Israel, actually, and another third I grew up in the UK. And part of that third as well, I've been traveling in my early 20s. And then the last third, I say, is being Aotearoa here. So it's been pretty special to have such a big chunk of time here. And one of the reasons I came to New Zealand is I've been traveling around the world, as I said, and I've been looking for a place to settle and to create some type of a life, I guess, that's sustainable and can be you know, something that we can take with us to the future, something that can be healthy and productive. And I ended up in New Zealand because this felt like the most potential place to actually achieve this goal.
Do you remember when you first came across during your life, like, I don't know, sustainable sort of living and things like that? Do you have any memories of that, or has it always kind of been there for you? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I grew up on a farm, so we had beehives, we had chickens, you know, we had ducks and a couple of sheep, you know, just as pets as well. And I remember my father's grandpa, so my great-grandpa, he had gardens and beehives right in his backyard as well. So that was a big experience for me being a child, just seeing how everything kind of came to be in their household. Everything was just around them. And when I was 18, I actually bought some fresh strawberry seedling one day, and I decided to plant them down and see what happens. And I probably got a handful out of those few plants, and it was nice. It was really nice to have that experience of planting something, seeing it grow, having a feed, and going, I can do more of this. I can get more strawberries probably if I did more. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in a nutshell, you know. And during my travels, I really got interested in, you know, kind of crossing different continents, different countries, different cultures. And I've seen how different people garden according to their culture, according to their climate. And I've just kind of picked a little bit of everybody's brains, let's say, and just accumulated enough knowledge to come up with my own way that I feel comfortable with and that I enjoy, you know, gardening. So
that's really interesting. I mean, was it mostly similarities, would you say, between cultures and continents, or differences, or how would you kind of talk about that?
Well, for starters, everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants to get a good crop. Everybody wants to have food on the table in the end of the day. So people do what they know and what they're accustomed to. Unfortunately, I've seen a lot of new ways of gardening that are not really healthy for the soil health and not really practical long term. Particularly the monoculture and kind of the heavy tilling kind of practices that we know and we see out there. And what I did like is to see kind of local farmers, you know, really small communities, and local just kind of household gardeners, how much care and attention they give to their gardens, and nourish the soil. And I saw the benefits, and I saw the continuity as well, and the closed cycle on their land, how they use materials that are really accessible and close, you know, close to them, so they don't need to go and get materials from far away. And it's just kind of a nice, sustainable closed loop that those gardeners been practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Irrigation-wise, I've noticed a lot of differences in different climates. There is trench methods, you know, there is like terraces methods, open drain method, where you just fill up the whole trench with water and then you just close it up again and it just seeps through, or mulching with rocks in really hot climates. If you don't have a lot of carbon material, you know, we used to, back in Israel and in the south especially, we used to mulch our trees with stones, with rocks.
Yeah. Just put them on top of the soil, like under the drip line or whatever.
Yeah, So they do get quite nice and warm, and it's not scorching the soil underneath. So you get the shade underneath. You lift up a rock, and it's nice and cool because it's been having the chance to cool overnight.
Yeah.
So it keeps cool underneath, and then almost like at nighttime, when you want to just warm up those roots a little bit, that stone actually radiates the warmth.
Yeah.
Down to the root system. So that's little things like this that cultures have, you know, little practices that it's nice to observe. But you can't imitate everything, and because it's not suitable necessarily to the current climate, you know, like to where we are. So,
yeah.
Just nice to see.
Must be really interesting, though. So were you like doing like woofing or something in these places around? Or?
I didn't know that I was doing woofing, but I was. I was kind of exploring my, you know, I was like journeying around the world, kind of finding who I am and in this world, I guess, in my early 20s, you know, just exploring and meeting new cultures. I was really interested in the, particularly in the Aborigines of Australia and the Native Americans of North America.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I went to seek their wisdom, their culture, their stories. And I ended up seeing as well a lot of gardening methods. And then ended up staying and helping, just, you know, like camping in, you know, someone's old, you know, backyard, picking heritage tomatoes for a few weeks, or going to an organic peach orchard and, you know, harvesting peaches for a month, and just keep going. And you just hear the stories as you do, you know, your daily mahi, and that's, I think, that's the way to learn. Just go and get involved with the people that live on the land and know the story. Yeah, and there's something magical as well, kind of, that, just that camping as well, you know, you get to be quite outdoors and, you know, involved with the season. It's quite special.
Cool, man, yeah.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, all right. And so whereabouts were you in the United States then?
Well, mainly Canada.
Ah, right up in Canada, okay.
Yeah. I've actually hitchhiked when I was 21 across from Montreal, all the way to Vancouver.
Right.
And I've done it really slow because I really enjoyed the journey. And I remember sometimes I would hitch a ride and we would just drive across and chat along, and then I would see this amazing river on the side and I'd go, stop, you know, this is where I'm going to camp tonight. And I'd just, you know, hop off the car and like walk up the stream a few K and like just set up a little bit of a camp, make a little bonfire and cook some dinner and wake up the next day and see a bear or an elk. Keep going, you know, just with my own business. Business as usual out there, you know, you just wake up and there's an elk staring at you. That's
cool. Pretty, adventures, man.
Pretty cool adventures.
Okay. And in Australia, where'd you sort of go over there?
We've been at the start. My brother used to live in Melbourne.
Right.
So that's where I started, kind of. I was in my 20s then. That was my first kind of overseas journey. I stayed in Melbourne for a few months, and then I moved to Perth. And that Western Australia was amazing. I really loved that kind of climate. It kind of was quite similar to Israel for me as well, dry and warm, and you know, desert. which I really loved that environment.
Yeah.
And then I went to the east and Byron Bay and north all the way up to Cairns. And yeah, just beautiful people all the way.
All right.
Yeah.
And did you stumble across like permaculture over in Australia, or were you already aware of it then, or?
Well, nah, not really. It was, as I said, I was 20, and I wasn't really. I was looking for adventure more than necessarily, finding any particular gardening method or following a, you know, any type of, I don't have the word for it, but you know, wasn't really looking for anything. I was just trying to explore myself and the world. And so at that particular time, I haven't really found yet, let's say, permaculture at that stage. But yeah, on arrival back to Israel, I have met some of my childhood friends that have slightly got quite interested in this topic and started to experience and go to workshops. And good friend of mine actually moved and lived on a ecological permaculture farm and used to go to visit and just got quite excited by what I saw. And and I just started to do my own little gardens at the back of my parents' farm and just had my own little experiments. And in time, I just kept going and learned from quite experienced people. And just by experience of myself as well, I just kind of just got more and more into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Aotearoa. How'd that all come about?
So, it's a bit of a story there, but I'll make it short. I guess I was, going on a bit of an adventure in nature one day. I was 24, took some time off work, and then I just like to go sometimes out in nature on my own and clear my head, and I just went and sat by a river for a couple of days. I didn't even take a book. I just wanted to go on my own and just be present with the stream. And I just thought, let's see what happens, you know, if I just sit there. And it was the first time that I really just gave myself that time to really just be still and look within, I guess. And suddenly this message came on the second day. Go to New Zealand. Go to New Zealand. I was like, okay, yep, you're going to go to New Zealand and you're going to find a place. There's going to be lots of trees and gardening tools and all these amazing structures. And I didn't really know what this was all about, but I had to follow that calling.
Yeah,
I remember writing it down and wrote it down and just came home and started kind of rereading it every few days, that kind of insight that I got. And it became more and more real the more I gave it energy. And I thought, okay, well, I better go to New Zealand and find that place that I kind of saw.
Yeah.
Daydreamt.
And
and I came to New Zealand. I came to the South Island first, and I traveled for about a month down there and the Kahurangis, Golden Bay, met some amazing people.
Beautiful down there.
Oh, yeah. Still, I've got a lot of beautiful friends down there, really, really special people.
Mm.
Close to my heart still down there. And then I traveled up north, roughly where you're from. I went to a place called Otamatea Eco Village, Kaiwaka, about a K or two out of Kaiwaka. And I was there for about 5-6 months. And there I learned a lot about permaculture, the really special people that I stayed with at the time, Robert and Marika. They were really, really practical, really, really special, and at the same time, really artistic. So they showed me a way of gardening and working with a lot of joy. They really loved what they were doing, and I really got inspired a lot. And they had horses as well, and I really loved that.
Did you happen to wander onto the Worsfold farm in Kaiwaka? The Worsfolds. That's where I first came across permaculture up there. They're in Kaiwaka out those ways, and Bill Morrison actually went to their farm years ago. My mate Heath, who's about my age, you know, mid-40s kind of thing, when he was a kid, he remembers Bill Morrison being over there and got a beautiful old permaculture orchard and set up, and it looks rad, and that's up Kyle Walk away. So, yeah, they would have known each other, no doubt.
Yeah. The one farm that I have come across was the Kowanga Gardens.
Ah, yes.
Kay and Bob were part of that at the time.
Yeah.
And again, it was more an inspiration. I didn't really get to know them personally at the time necessarily, and it was close to the time that they actually moved down to Wairoa.
Yes,
in the east coast.
Yeah,
Kotare.
Yeah, they set up another village down there, didn't they?
Yeah, Kotare.
Yeah. You been down and checked that one out, or?
I have. Yeah, went for a few days, quite a few years ago.
Yeah,
and they were just kind of setting up.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really inspiring, you know, to see the effort that people go through to set up something. But it's at the same time, it's really rewarding to know, because I see land a bit like a baby. You know, you give it everything you can, you give it all the nourishment it needs, and at some point, it's walking on its own and it's free, and you know, it's kind of independent, looking after itself, and then later on, it starts to look after you. Hopefully, you know that. Kind of, you know, it's...
I've never heard land described like that before, but yeah, good one, man. I like it.
Yeah, it's alive and it's growing. And it's giving back. Yeah,
all right.
It's beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I interrupted you, sorry, man. But anyways, you're up north in Kyle Walker there, and then...
Yeah, I was there for about 5-6 months. Yeah. And again, part of the story, you know, we only have a short amount of time, so, but the place in the Coromandel called Wilderland, it's an organic farm that was established at night on 1964. This name came up a few times during those 5-6 months of since my arrival to Aotearoa, and when the third time came along, there was this she was a professor of anthropology from Michigan. She came along. She was doing some research for community living in New Zealand. She wanted to bring her students from all the way from Michigan to here to have a bit of a study on how communities, because she saw that community is quite an alive and happening thing in New Zealand at the time. This was, you know, 10 years ago.
So the Wilder one, is that in Port Charles?
No, that's just south of Fitianga and a little bit north of Coral Glen.
Okay, yeah.
It's right on the harbour, right on the estuary. Mm. And yeah, it's an amazing 60-hectare piece of land. And yeah, when this professor came along, and we sat one day for lunch, and she told me about her story, and I said, so which community do you think you're going to do your work about, you know, your study? And she said Wilderland. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's the third time I heard Wilderland since I'm here, and that must be a good sign to go and visit myself. I heard some good things about it. So a week later I was there. Met some really special people, and the place, as I was walking around, those kind of visuals that I had on that stream, on the bank of that stream back at home in Israel, you know, a couple of years prior to that, suddenly all clicked, and I said, oh, that's what I saw, this is the place I actually really just daydreamt and envisioned.
That's really cool, isn't it?
And it's something just dropped in my heart and was like, okay, like this is it. I'm going to be here for a while. And I just felt welcomed.
Yeah.
So that's, from then on, I just felt like treating that place like my home. And I felt like giving it everything I have. And I actually ended up staying there for roughly on and off about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, right.
My son was born on that whenua.
Right.
Lived there with my family for quite a while and just learned those kind of larger practical skills, but doing them, kind of gardening skills, but doing them in bulk and doing them to a certain succession that lasts and is kind of continuous. So you can really rely on the food on a daily basis. So there weren't too many gaps in the end. We kind of nailed it down to we always have something to eat. And
And that was just to feed you guys there, or did you sell a bit off the place as well?
Fresh produce wise, let's say vegetables was kind of enough to feed us, but there was, you know, between 20 to 40 people on average.
Every day, so
summertime we would go up to numbers of about 40 people a day having lunch together. And in the winters we would sometimes go quite low. Everybody goes, you know, lots of volunteers go home, and some of the locals try and take a break for themselves because things are quite slow, and it's a good time to take off for a bit. But yeah, you know, the storerooms were full. We had beehives, we had orchards, nut trees, apples, you know, like, apple orchard was massive. So we used to dry fruit and on sale, dried apples, dried persimmons. Anything we had in excess, we sold off. But yeah, usually the market garden side of things takes a lot of input and a lot of energy and a lot of kind of delicate attention.
Mm.
And we did see that feeding 40 people was enough for us to just work on those gardens for ourselves. So if we had a bumper crop, we would share that or preserve it and have some for winter. But yeah, one of my what was I going to say? I forgot. Anyway, lots of, you know, practical experience. Anyway, like lots of that.
Oh, how cool, man! Yeah. Interesting. I'm always fascinated by that kind of stuff. You know, you have an epiphany or a vision or something or whatever, and then suddenly you find a place and it's like deja vu kind of. Actually, where have I seen this before or whatever? I always find that stuff fascinating. Okay, so they're like 5 years or something over the Coromandel, and then why did you leave?
So the one thing, you know, this place was one of the most sustainable pieces of land I've ever been on. Yeah. I felt like, you know, I remember there were days I would walk down with a rod down to the water, come back with a kahawai in my hand, go through the gardens, pick an onion, pick a couple of tomatoes, pick a cucumber, pepper, a few leaves of this and that, and walk home with dinner. You know, there's no shops. You don't need to go anywhere. It's right there.
Lovely.
And that's, again, another thing in my life that clicked and go, we can do this. We don't need to go shops every single, you know, like, if you have a small piece of land, okay, maybe you can't have all of that, but, you know, there's certain things that are very practical and possible to grow in your backyard, things that can, you know, really sustain you and a big chunk of your diet. So saw that, got really excited. And then, you know, the one thing that wasn't sustainable, unfortunately, was the people side of things. So this place, this land was gifted in the 90s, I believe, by the owner. Mm. He basically registered that land. He gifted it, and it became a educational charitable trust. Mm. And that was Dan Hansen's vision, basically, to keep this land as an educational organic farm.
Yeah.
So he knew, you know, that one day when he goes, this place is going to stay with this dream going on and supporting people, learning how to grow their food, learning how to live off the land, with the land.
Beautiful dream. Yeah.
And it's still going until today, and it had lots of hardships as well along the way. Actually, when we moved to Raglan 6 years ago, literally 2 months after we have arrived, there was a wildfire that have taken over and just got out of control up there. And a lot of us long-term kind of residents that were on that whenua for about 5-6 years have just left. We've all kind of held that place and looked after it and gave it everything we could, and we felt like it was time. The part of having the thing about having a charitable trust is that you don't necessarily own the land, and that's, you know, it's a beautiful approach to life. You know, we were all kaitiakis on the land, but at the same time we had families we had to look after, we had to feed and clothe, and health-wise, you know, if you want to go to the dentist, and there's all these little basic things, you know, you want to drive and visit your family, or you want to, you know, things that you want to you want to do, even if it's just minimal.
Yeah.
But income-wise, it wasn't really sustaining us. And there wasn't that security of community. People were coming and going, and concepts were kind of shifting sometimes. And so it wasn't as stable. And we felt like we needed something a bit more stable. And we actually looked up north again. We looked at just off Kaiwaka to the east, Mangawhai. We went out there. We had beautiful friends over there, and we went to visit and stay with them for about a week. Something didn't necessarily click at that time, so we moved down to Raglan for another couple of nights and stayed with our friends Yanis and Monica. It was really, really beautiful. Couple of days, everything just kind of clicked into place, and we met awesome people. Everybody was friendly and welcoming, and the next day we were here, there was already a house sitting gig for us to take on to, and we're just like, okay, we're coming, you know, this is the place has invited us, we feel welcome, so we just followed that.
All right.
Yeah, we just went with it.
Yeah,
it was time.
And that was, what'd you say, 6 years ago or something like that?
Yep, 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Spring of, it was August 2016.
All right.
That we moved.
Okay.
Moved over to Whangaroa.
All right.
Yeah.
And you've got a piece of land of your own now out Ruapuki. How'd that one come about? How long you been out there?
Oh, we've been just over 2 years now. Since we arrived, basically I was, I'll start with the, you know, start at the start, really. We came down and we started renting out some homes in town, and as it goes in Raglan, the renting market is quite difficult.
People, sure is.
You know, people asking you to move because they want to renovate, and suddenly they need to stay out because they want to move in themselves or whatnot. And we moved probably 4 or 5 times within, you know, 4 or 5 years, and we just had enough. At some point, actually, my brother, my father, and I came together in concept of, well, the market is going pretty crazy, and we felt like that dream, you know, like of having a piece of land, again, like an educational piece of land, kind of like the same concepts and principles of what I came from the Coromandel, the things that came with me, I wanted to share them. And I wanted to enjoy what I was sharing before, that way of living, being able to go to the garden, you know, pick your produce, have your things kind of right there, right around you, and be able to feed your family and your relatives and friends with that healthy and fresh, you know, and abundance. So. Yeah, so we put our forces together, family-wise, my father and I and my brother, and we just jumped on it. We went on what we could, and we couldn't afford anything around town with the money that we had at the time, and the market was just unreasonable, and it's even worse now. So that's why, hence, you know, kind of we just had to expand our horizon a little bit and go, and I'm actually really, really happy that we chose out there. So just that quiet, the presence of Karioi is really, really, really potent. The sound of Ruapuki waves breaking at night, it's quite magical, and I love it that if somebody comes out, it means that they've put in the effort, you know. It's not actually that far, actually, you know. It's 15 to 20 minutes max, and you're there.
Yeah.
I think people don't realize that. It's how close it is.
Mm,
mm. But you go there and it's still that, it is quite, you know, it is developing slowly, but still there is that really outback, quiet and really friendly, neighborly relationships out there. And I'm really happy we settled.
All right.
On there.
And so that was 1 or 2 years ago or something?
Yeah, a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess you're just there at the beginning, I suppose, of... Planting things to eat.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, yeah. It's all at the baby stage. And actually, so until trees are mature and heavy cropping, I am kind of relying on a bit of produce off the gardens as a start, because gardens give you kind of a quick return, let's say, quite, you know, relatively fast. And so it's one thing that you can start achieving relatively quick. You see the results within a couple of months, if you know. 2-3 months and you start having food on the table quite regularly, you know, if you're onto it. And it's
you bought in a big bunch of beautiful looking carrots too. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. As I said, it's a bumper crop at the moment, so it's nice to share. When there's more than enough, so welcome. I think that in time, I'll probably start reducing, let's say, relying on gardening as much, but more relying on more like the big crops, like the trees, the avocados, the macadamias, the walnuts, persimmons, apricots. I've even got things like chirimoyas, lots of peaches and heaps of varieties of apples. I've planted about 100 fruit trees so far.
Good on you, man.
And roughly 1,000 natives and firewood and kind of shelter belt trees that will be replaced by natives in time.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying not to be too invasive on the land in terms of machinery. You know, I don't really use excavations. I don't use a tractor for farming. You know, I don't use any of that kind of stuff. So it's really, really soft on the soil. Trying to, you know, have as less harsh impact and then leave behind just nourished and hopefully more better than I found it, let's say, you know.
that's the dream, that's mate. The that's goal. That's the kaitiaki thing, isn't it? You know?
Saying the word kaitiaki brings me to I don't feel like I own that land, you know, and part of it is sharing it with the family, which is how I see it. I am a kaitiaki on the land and I do look after it. And I know that nothing is forever, so I don't get too attached. All I can do is, like you're saying, be the kaitiaki and give it what I can when I can.
Oh, right. Yeah. And you've got a workshop coming up out there. Tell us about that.
So the workshop is going to be about the principles of basically gardening. It's a method that's been out there for a little while now. It's called a no-dig or the no-till gardening. And basically it's just a method of not needing to disturb the soil and still having a really nice soil to work with by just adding and nourishing the soil with good compost and homemade liquid fertilizers and basic local materials that are available to all of us, really. We can all start a garden tomorrow if we wanted to. So that's if you want to start a garden and have a really, really in-depth and just right into it kind of practical knowledge, you're welcome to come in. Otherwise, just catch me somewhere on the street and ask me all about it, and I'll probably share with you everything I know anyway. So I'm not off selling my workshop because I would love people to come and learn and see it in action because I learn by doing. So, you can come and actually learn by actually doing it and having some soil under your nails and
Oh, for sure. Well, you might as well tell us when it is and where it is in that anyway.
1st of October.
1st of October?
Yep, it's a good date to remember. 1st of the month, and from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, and it's on our whenua out in Ruapuki, so it's 527 Ruapuki Road, and don't just rock up because it's probably better to sign up. So you look at my there's a few posters that I've put around town on the odd notice boards, and then there's a friend of mine that also helps me a lot with advertising on the web because I'm not really a part of any of those social medias just yet. I haven't got involved in any of those. So I've got a bit of exposure out there through good friends.
All right.
Yeah.
And so keep on the web, where do you find these things?
What do you mean?
How do you look up the workshop?
It's probably going to be like on the gardeners. There's all these platforms, I guess, up there. Yeah, there's the notice board, and it'll just pop up at some spots, and hopefully people can do their thing and kind of promoting it as well, so people see it.
Do you want to give your email out?
Yeah, so it's edible, the word edible, EDIBLE _ landscapes with an S at the end, and it's at hotmail.com.
Landscapes at hotmail.
edible_landscapes@hotmail.com.
All right.
And yeah, if you're interested, if you're curious, if you have any questions or inquiries, just give us an email, and I'll be happy to answer and, yeah, see if I can help.
All right. So that's 1st of October, 10 till 4 out. Beautiful Ruapuki ways. And if, yeah, if you want to find out about that one, edible_landscapes at hotmail.com. And believe it or not, it's like 20 to 2. When you first came on, you said it was like, I'll be able to talk for maybe 10 minutes. And then, you know, that was like, it's been a good 40 minutes solid, man. So thanks very much, Josh. Thanks very much
for
coming in. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much for the invite.
And good luck for the workshops. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to get you back on again. We'll have more of a chat because, it's a great story. And I'd love to keep in touch with your progress on how it goes.
Come visit.
I will, yes. I will get out there. Yeah. Thanks again, Josh. Appreciate it, man.
You're welcome.